Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have back as my guest Dr. Kelly Turner, who is the author of Radical Remission, Surviving Cancer at All Odds, The 9 Key Factors That Can Make a Real Difference. Dr. Turner's been on the show before, and those shows are archived at www.plasticos.com if you want to hear that discussion and other discussions about cancer. And she's back on now because we have further information to give to the public. Thanks for joining us, Kelly.
Thanks for having me, Dr. Kolb. Happy to be back.
Well, I guess we can start with just a review of some of the factors that you found in your study. Would you like to describe a little bit of your background and what caused you to do this study?
Sure, absolutely. Well, I have my PhD in cancer research. And specifically, my PhD involved studying radical remissions. It's something that the medical field calls spontaneous remission, and they've called it that for 100 years. But after investigating it intensively for the past 10 years now, I choose not to use that word spontaneous on purpose, because these people who heal from cancer against incredible odds, it doesn't happen spontaneously. It doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen without a cause. What I found after analyzing over 1,500 of these cases is that they all do 9 things. There are 9 things that they have in common that they're doing to try to turn their cancer around. And just by way of definition, a radical remission occurs when someone heals from cancer without using any Western medicine ever, or mm-hmm. after using Western medicine to its fullest, but it didn't work and they were basically sent home on hospice. This is, these are rare recoveries, and they're often called miraculous recoveries. But what I found with my research is that they're really not miraculous. These people are doing 9 specific things to basically activate their immune system.
Okay, well, let's talk about, the first one, which is changing your diet.
Yes, so two of the 9 are physical. The other 7, actually, believe it or not, are mental and emotional. So mm-hmm. in terms of the diet change, what they all had in common, and, I've studied people from around the globe, all ages, and then all types of cancer. So while individually some of them got even more specific than this, the general trends for diet were greatly increasing their fruits and vegetables, while reducing meat, gluten, sweets, meaning sugars, and dairy. They also switched to organic and drank filtered water as well. But reducing the meat, wheat, sweets, and dairy was a big common thread. I've studied one of the people who comes to mind is one of my subjects named John, who I mentioned in the book. He had advanced stage 4 prostate cancer, so it had spread. And this was after doing surgery, chemo, and radiation. So it came back mm-hmm. kind of aggressively. And for him, he came across this book about, changing your diet for cancer, and he tried it. And his PSA, which is the blood marker for prostate cancer, dropped down dramatically after just 3 months on his diet. So he's been able to beat the odds. He has not had to go back and do any further chemo or radiation or hormone therapy, simply through doing these 9 factors, but specifically the diet. And he's been well now for more than 8 years since the cancer came back. So pretty powerful stories when you do meet these people.
Yeah, some patients go on the Budwick diet. Some people go on Dr. Kelly's diet. Some people go on a raw foods diet. The diets are really radically different, and what I recommend people do is do applied kinesiology or muscle testing. I saw a patient the other day who had cancer, and she went on the Budwick diet, and cancer went away. She went off the Budwick diet, cancer came back, and she was saying that she didn't go back. I said, well, why didn't you go back on the Budwick diet? And she said, because it's controversial. It has milk products, and I'm sitting here, well, I muscle tested, and she really needed to be on the Budwick diet. So it's a little counterintuitive because the diets are so different, but each diet may fit one population pretty well.
Exactly. And that's why there were these general trends in my findings, right? So some people eliminated dairy and red meat completely. Other people just reduced them. And when they did mm-hmm. eat them, they made sure that they were organic and grass-fed and hormone-free right. and everything. But yeah, the Budweek diet involves, you know, whipping that cottage cheese with the flax seeds. So, and it does work for some people. And then other people that I met, you know, went completely vegan, and other people did a ketogenic diet, and other people did a paleo. But what I always mm-hmm. say is that the one thing they all have in common is greatly increasing their vegetables and fruits. And right. so finding out the balance of those other factors, you know, do you eat grains? Don't you? Do you eat dairy? Don't you? Muscle testing is a very interesting way of determining that for your body. But for the most part, I haven't seen anybody for whom vegetables were bad.
Right. And then the other thing, there is a way to get really beneficial substances into your body using Bravo yogurt. You know, that's the one that has the GCMAP, and that's very, very beneficial because that can fight cancer. So that's something that people should look up. And, you know, we have one thing in common. All of the diets have the effect of making the patient more alkaline. And it's well known that cancer doesn't grow as well in an alkaline environment as it does in an acidic environment. So you can also throw in there alkalized water. If people can't change their diet, I'll have them drink alkaline water and then take buffer pH twice a day and check their urine pH. And, you know, so you can change the alkalinity of the patient without, you know, if they can't, like if they're in a nursing home or, you know, somewhere where the diet is just not able to be manipulated.
Yeah, very interesting. And certainly a lot of my radical remission subjects did test their urine with pH strips. I know that's also controversial, but I find it really a cheap and easy monitoring tool. You know, you really can see the acidity or, you know, in some ways the inflammation in your diet going up or down depending on, mm-hmm. on what you eat and how dark that strip is, how light it is. So that's a great tip.
And I've had a number of patients that were like 8 to 9 years out with metastatic disease, and they mm-hmm. were on the strict diet. And when they brought donuts to the office, I knew that they were going to check on out. You know, they started eating sweets, and you know, they knew. I mean, they knew if they did that, the cancer would take over. Because we're talking stage four here, but they would have stage four for 6 years, no problems, just mm-hmm. live with their cancer. But
absolutely.
When you lose your discipline, then
it can
the cancer
back.
Will take you out.
Yeah. I always use the analogy of mold. I mean, it's sort of like mold in your basement, and you know, basements are.
You can't throw water on it.
basements are sort of naturally damp, and so you really have to be diligent about, you know, keeping
right.
that fan on and keeping the dehumidifier on and getting some sunlight in there. And if you stop doing those things, if you go away on vacation for a month and turn off your dehumidifier, you'll come back, there'll be mold in your basement. The
right.
radical remission survivors that I study, they didn't just use these 9 factors to go from stage 4 to remission. They use them. Now, these are permanent changes in their lives, and they use them to mm-hmm. stay in remission. And what they've noticed is that if they start slacking off on too many of them, their cancer markers start to go up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, we need some, you know, randomized control trials before we can prove this, but certainly in my sample set, what they've noticed is if they do go way off the diet or if they really let their stress come back, their blood markers, which they're usually monitoring every 3 to 6 months because that's mm-hmm. the kind of proactivity that radical remission survivors exhibit, those markers will start to go back up. And so these really mm-hmm. are permanent lifestyle changes that they make. And they don't regret them. They feel much better after making these lifestyle changes.
Yeah, I want to just give my opinion here. I don't think people develop cancer because of their diet, though. I think the diet, especially the amount of sugar and the alkalinity, determine a lot about how fast the cancer grows or doesn't grow. But mm-hmm. the most common cause when we're muscle testing, the cause of the cancer is emotional. And so I think it's very appropriate that the other things that we're going to talk about in the book are emotional, mental, and spiritual.
Yeah.
For example, when we're muscle testing the cause of the cancers, the primary cancer, the first cancer, is usually emotional, and then about half the time geopathic stress, And then there's a smattering of other things like toxic chemical, electromagnetic, generational curse, radiation, hormonal for prostate and breast, of course, and infectious. There's all sorts of infectious. There's mildew, fungal, bacterial, viral, parasite. And mildew is very common in leukemia, by the way, which is very interesting.
But we
need to treat the cause of the cancer. But what is so interesting to me is that a lot of times cancer goes away only to recur. But when it recurs, it's usually not emotional. Isn't that interesting? It's usually not emotional. They've dealt with the emotional part of it with forgiveness or whatever, you know, other spiritual means that energy is released with. Oftentimes, the recurrent cancer is electromagnetic, and they have a cell tower near their home, or their husband put a bunch of Wi-Fis in their bedroom. Isn't that interesting? So a little bit of shift in electromagnetics and energetics can make cancer come back.
Wow, and you're finding this through muscle testing?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we have patients who've had cancer for over 10 years, and it's almost like you really have to determine what is causing it to come back. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's parasite, and you know how difficult it is to diagnose parasite if it's not in the GI tract. It's virtually impossible. I mean, how are you going to do it? I mean, it's
right.
You can't. I mean, other than muscle testing, there's no way to do it. And Huldah Clark knew that treatment of the parasites were very, very important in solid tumors anyway, not lymphomas and leukemias so much because they're more chemical. But in solid tumors, parasites were very common. And then, of course, prostate and breast hormonal is very important because that's a little different.
Right. So. And certainly, you know, the second physical factor of the nine that I found was herbs and supplements. And for some radical remission survivors that I've studied, taking mm-hmm. an anti-parasitic regimen was really the turnkey for them. You know, they were doing the other eight factors as well, but sometimes clearing those parasites, whether you're doing it through supplements or homeopathy mm-hmm. or even, you know, there's lots of different...
Even drugs.
Yeah, there's lots of ways.
They work.
And they're necessary. I mean, one of the interviews that I had during my year of international research was with an integrative doctor in Japan, and he believes very strongly that certain cancers are caused by bacteria and parasites that escape the GI tract, where in the GI tract they're mm-hmm. okay, but if you have like leaky gut or something, they can travel to other parts of the body, and then, you know, for example, he sees many brain cancers as viral infections in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And so he will use some antivirals or mm-hmm. some medications, and he uses muscle testing to figure out which ones to use. It's very interesting. And he's had incredible results.
Yeah, we do too. The thing with we test each area. I want to back up a minute. In my view of cancer occurs when the energy of an organ drops below a certain point. And it doesn't matter why it drops there. I mean, if you're near a nuclear reactor that's misbehaving, you can get, you know, radiation that goes to your thyroid, and then you probably are going to get thyroid cancer. I mean, it's real common. It's not, I mean, unless you can take a big dose of iodine in the meantime, you're probably going to get it. You know, it's predictable. But anything that lowers the energy of the organ, in that case, it would be radiation. But what is so amazing, I was talking to Burton Goldberg the other day. He's the editor of Alternative Medicine magazine. And I said, well, Burton, I'm finding about 50% of patients with breast cancer have geopathic stress. And he says, oh, no, Susan, 70% of patients with cancer have geopathic stress. And that's just remarkable. In other mm-hmm. words, if they would move their bed or move their desk or move where they spend their time off the geopathic stress line, their immune system could come back. And he says there's cases of cancer going into remission just because they were able to get off the geopathic stress line, especially if they were sleeping on it.
Wow.
That's something that regular medicine doesn't know.
or, you know, is not even really looking at yet. This focus on geopathic stress and electromagnetics is something that I'm starting to follow very closely, because, you know, in the end, we are electromagnetic beings. You know, we have this right. electrical pulse in us, and it starts with our heartbeat. But certainly in terms of other medicine systems, like traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurveda and stuff, the idea of qi and prana being truly energetic and related to electromagnetics is a centuries-old idea. And so the thought that our Wi-Fi and the placement of our beds and everything might affect the vibration, the true vibration of our electric cells, is really interesting. And certainly the EMF research that's starting to trickle in is quite convincing. So I'm not surprised that you're finding such luck in treating that with cancer patients. It's very interesting. And when you say
it's basically unseen is the problem. You don't see these electromagnetic waves. And if you don't have the devices to measure them, you might not know that a cell tower was put outside your neighborhood. You know, you might not know. I mean,
right.
Unless you saw it, it's not, you know, it's not something that we can always even test.
Exactly. But I love your observation that cancer occurs when the energy of an organ drops below a certain point. That certainly resonates with what a lot of my subjects said. And what's interesting is that there's so many ways to get that energy to drop, right? You can go through a painful divorce. You can be in a job that you say is, quote-unquote, killing you. You can, live next to a cell tower. You can, unwittingly be ingesting some toxins from your water. But this idea that, you're just sort of draining or damaging that organ system, and what happens when things get damaged is cells start behaving cancerously, is an interesting phenomenon for me. I just read a new study just came out about mitochondria failure, which is something that I first heard about, again, in Japan during my research. But it's the idea that, mitochondria in a cell, and this is taking us back to high school biology, mitochondria are responsible for many things, but two of the things they're responsible for are when a cell should die and when a cell should reproduce. And, of course, cancer,
right.
The hallmark of cancer is that it doesn't die when it should, and it reproduces like crazy when it shouldn't be. And so, right. really, all signs point back to the mitochondria. And there's so many ways that you can damage mitochondria. You can geopathic stress, emotional stress, toxins, et cetera. So I do think we're starting to really get down to the bottom of things with cancer, and it's an exciting time.
And when things are acidic, I do believe that oxidative stress occurs. And I believe wasn't it Warburg that got the Nobel Prize for determining that cancer's really main cause was oxidative stress?
Yeah, it was Otto Warburg in the 1920s or 30s. And it's exactly what I'm talking about. He basically discovered when the mitochondria fail due to oxidative stress, the cell goes from aerobic respiration, which means breathing via oxygen, to anaerobic respiration, which means breathing or getting its energy from sugar fermentation, which is why...
Right. Sugar feeds cancer.
Yeah, it feeds it, right? We don't know if sugar causes cancer. We can't say that yet. But once a cell starts behaving cancerously, meaning that breathing anaerobically, it needs sugar. And so, if you reduce sugar from your diet, you're giving the cancer cells less to feed on. But yeah, Otto Warburg, and there's a great textbook called, it'll come to me, but it's a recent textbook about how cancer is this metabolic. It's called Cancer as a Metabolic Disease, and it covers all this really fascinating stuff. Anyway, but we're off topic now.
Well, so there are. I'll tell you a little bit about the holistic cancer protocol that we use here. We have immune supplements which help the immune system recognize the cancer. We have anti-cancer supplements, which actually kill cancer. They aren't chemotherapy, but they're like natural chemotherapy. Mm-hmm. And then we have detox supplements, especially if it's toxic chemical. And then we have supplements that help prevent angiogenesis, like vasostatin and pectisol, so that the metastatic cancer can't spread as quickly. And then we have supplements that are just known to help, like coffee enemas. They're known to help increase liver glutathione so that when the tumor starts breaking down, it doesn't overwhelm the system. So specific supplements like that. So that's what we do with the supplements. We muscle test and see which ones are going to be the best ones.
Great, great. Yeah, I mean, certainly in my research, bladder commission survivors take all different kinds of supplements, which was frustrating for me because I was hoping they would all be taking the same one.
It's very varied. Cancer is not one disease. It just isn't. You know,
it would be easier if it was, but it isn't. It isn't. You know, the three main categories that I've found for my subjects are supplements that add something to your system that you're lacking, right? So they're boosting, they're giving you something that you were deficient in, such as trace minerals or vitamin D. Another
selenium,
category is,
Selenium's important.
Definitely. And then they were also taking supplements that took things out of their body, right? So taking out bad things like parasites, heavy metals. And then the third category, milk thistle, that sort of thing. And then the third category for radical remission survivors was supplements that help you digest your food better and really try to correct your microbiome, right? So we're prebiotics, probiotics, and enzymes. And I'm sure you work on the gut as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if it's involved. Again, you know, some cancer patients are incredibly healthy people, including their gut. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on the cause. If it's primarily emotional, their gut may be fine. Other people, it may be their gut that is really one of the main causes, like you said, letting in bad critters that then lower the energy of the organ. So it just depends on the patient.
Exactly. And, you know, obviously seven of the nine factors that I uncovered were emotional. And these are healing factors, right? These are things that people are doing to try to change their emotional patterns and heal and everything. What are some of the emotional interventions or treatments that you offer, especially when cancer is related to the emotional level?
I give them Dr. Michael Rice's No Fault Forgiveness Worksheet and tell them to go on his website, whyagain.com, or I think it's whyagain.org. And watch the 20-minute video there on how to use the worksheet. This is the ancient Aramaic form that Jesus taught of forgiveness, and it is remarkable. It will help you remove energies within yourself that are no longer serving you and are probably hurting you. And we tell them it's not the Greek idea of pardon. We're not letting the other person off the hook for some horrible thing they did to us. It's getting an energy out of our body that lowered the energy in that breast and let the cancer set in. So they're usually very motivated once they determine by muscle testing that it's almost all emotional, because then it's really in their hands to do the releasing work.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, I'll have to check out Michael Rice's work.
Yeah, please do. It's real good. He has lots of rather radical remissions from cancer. So lots of stories.
Wonderful.
But it has to be emotional. Again, you know, if it's parasitic, you really need to treat the parasite.
Right.
You know, it depends on
right.
what it is. Oh, I wanted to tell you, there is a place, I can't tell exactly where it is. It's not in, it might be in Iceland. Anyway, there's a place where they're using viruses to treat cancer. And the virus goes preferentially to the cancer cells and kills them.
Yeah, I think I've heard of that. The International Virus Therapy Center, right? RIGVIR is the virus that they
use. Is it in Iceland? Is that where it is?
I believe it is. It's the
I just want to mention that because I thought that was a novel. You know, especially if you have a high tumor burden, which is real difficult with holistic cancer, as you can imagine. The more tumor you have, then you got to break that tumor down and get it through the liver and get it processed out, and it can be, you know, onerous. So it might be good to kill it off with the virus.
Right, right. Yeah, I think we're talking about the same place, cancervirotherapy.eu, which is over mm-hmm. in Europe.
Right.
Yeah, that's an interesting way. It's an interesting alternative to surgery, right? Some radical remission survivors. I've now added this third category. I used to study people who just never used Western medicine at all to heal their cancer,
mm-hmm.
or used it to the fullest and it didn't work, so then they were sent home on hospice, and then they only used alternative methods. Since the publication of my book, I've added a third category, which are people who combine conventional and complementary medicine at the same time to overcome a very mm-hmm. serious cancer prognosis. So for me, that cutoff is anything with a less than 25% five-year survival rate. So I have started looking at people who, you know, use surgery plus all the nine factors for their pancreatic cancer, for example. And what they often find is that surgery, depending on the tumor and the tumor burden, surgery can be a way to sort of get a bit of a head start in terms of just physically removing the burden of it so that mm-hmm. they can then work on the underlying causes. But I like your thought of using the virotherapy as an alternative to surgery or another option.
Well, or especially if you can't get around the tumor. I mean, I'm a surgeon.
You can't operate. We
do,
right.
We do all sorts of surgery here for cancer. And if you can't get around the tumor and you're going to be going through the tumor that's spread out in the lymphatics and everything, that's probably not the best thing to do.
Gotcha. And is that because it might spread if you're having to
yeah.
poke the tumor?
Yeah, the body has ways of walling things off, probably mm-hmm. even within the lymphatics. And then, but once you surgically, you know, disturb that, then it's been known. I mean, I haven't seen it personally. It's probably because we're doing so many other things, but it's been known to rapidly take a person out. It's almost like it's an infection, you know. You don't cut into an infection. It can get in the bloodstream and cause sepsis.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's just not all cancers that are like this, but maybe the ones that are infectious, cutting through them is really a bad idea.
Mm, yeah, and certainly
you know, so I haven't been able to determine if there's a, you know, if it's only emotional, then is it just as dangerous to, you know, cut through a cancer or cut through an area that has microscopic cancer in it? I don't
Fascinating.
Know.
Now, how did a medical surgeon like you get into muscle testing and open to the idea that cancer might be caused by emotional trauma? How did that happen?
Well, I started seeing cancer patients back when I became educated in integrative holistic medicine because, you know, basically there's a fair number of people that would not do well with chemotherapy or radiation. I always muscle test chemo and radiation because some cancers are very sensitive to chemo and radiation. And like if you have a spinal cord tumor pressing on the spinal cord, you need to do radiation probably, a little spot radiation. It's almost an emergency. So mm-hmm. I'm not totally against chemo and radiation, but I am for having things work well. So I muscle test which surgery to do. I muscle test if chemo is going to be good, if radiation is going to be good. And most of the patients that come to me, so a fair number are neutral. They just want to know what's going to work. But many of them just have decided on their own they're not doing chemo or radiation, and usually they don't muscle test well for it. And I do it silently, so it's not like they get to, you know, influence it. So they're intuitive enough, probably because they're spiritual, that they know chemo and radiation are not the answer for them. And mm-hmm. so they find our clinic. We don't really advertise or anything, but you know, they just find our clinic through word of mouth, and we have a number of doctors that refer to us, including oncologists. So basically, they find us because it's a good fit. And I can do mastectomies. I can do, you know, lymph node biopsies and melanoma surgeries and skin cancer surgeries. So they get the benefit of having that done on their insurance, and yet at the same time, we're treating them with a holistic cancer protocol.
Wonderful. I wish.
So it's
I
a one-stop shop. And then if you lost your breast and want to have breast reconstruction, we can talk about that too.
Well, I wish there were more, MDs like you who were truly, truly integrative in the sense that you've been trained in, surgery and pharmaceuticals, but you've also been trained in and very much believe in complementary and alternative treatments. And so then you really can give people the most appropriate blend. And it's a really rare combo to find, especially in the United States, because I've interviewed doctors from all over the world, and you are a rare breed in the U.S., so we're lucky to have you.
Oh, thank you. I learned a lot from Dr. Bergeron. He is one of the main holistic cancer doctors in the Southeast, and he was with me in 99 when we established Avatar Cancer Center. And he had gone to the Barsalis Clinic and the Bahamas and, just all over. He was wealthy enough to be able to do that and studied, all, because really you have to leave the U.S. to learn about alternative cancer, as you know.
Yeah, so, that's why my research took me to 10
countries. He taught me a lot, and he's still in practice in Roswell, and we still refer patients to each other.
Wow.
So I had that benefit, too, of his experience. So.
Wonderful.
But I think in Europe, cancer is considered more of a chronic disease than it is in the U.S. because they don't jump in so fast with chemo and radiation. They do it like in colon cancer is not treated with chemo in Europe. They do dental work. They get out all the root canals and amalgams. They treat the gut. They do all sorts of things that are just really smart to get the person healthier. And a lot of times the cancer it doesn't always disappear, but it often they just live with it. It doesn't get any bigger.
Right.
And that's
right.
A concept that our doctors haven't really grasped yet here in the U.S. Cancer is a chronic condition. Yeah.
Yeah, it can be. And it's certainly something, just like people live with, a dormant herpes virus. That sometimes breaks out into cold sores, and when it does, they say, okay, well, I gotta reduce my stress and take it easy, and use my lysine supplement. Many radical remission survivors that I study do treat it as this thing that is chronic in the sense that it could come back if they sort of lapse, in their health regimen. And so I think we'll see more and more of that as people start living longer and longer with cancer, and having it might be small, might be just causing them no trouble, but it's there, and they just need to stay vigilant about keeping themselves emotionally and physically happy and healthy.
Yeah. I love your chapter on following your intuition. I tell people that cancer, especially stage 3 and 4 cancer, is like a final exam. It's like time to get really serious here. And what you need to get serious about is following your intuition, because that's the most important thing.
Oh, that's, a beautiful way of putting it. I was really surprised that intuition came up so often. I certainly didn't think it would be one of the most common factors. I thought it would come up here and there, but not in every single interview. And I've interviewed over 250 people in depth at this point. But it's, there's something about hearing those words, you have cancer, which of course in our culture is a death threat, right? It's a very scary death threat to hear you have cancer. Mm-hmm. And it seems to sort of kick in that intuition that we all have, that in, mm-hmm. That those life-saving instincts. And I can't tell you how many radical remission survivors I've interviewed who said, trust me, I don't usually hear voices, Dr. Turner, but after I was diagnosed, I heard this voice, and it was a calming voice. It was very clear, and it told me, do this, or look into this, or quit your job, and so I think you're exactly right. When you have stage 3 or stage 4, that intuition can get very loud, and the question is, do we listen to it? Because sometimes it can say really crazy things. I have this one subject who just kept hearing this strong intuitive voice that said, you've got to move.
They were on a geopathic stress line.
his house, it turned out that he'd been living in for 30 years, had toxic mold in the walls, black mold.
Oh, there you go. Toxic mold will take your immune system out really fast.
Yeah, right. So whether or not the mold caused his cancer or just knocked his immune system down, moving was one of the first steps that he needed to take, and his deep intuition knew that.
Right.
So it's, you know, as a researcher, I sort of resisted the fact that that intuition kept coming up over and over again because it felt too loosey-goosey to me. But the more
I think it's the main factor. I really do.
You do?
I think it's the main thing that guides these people out of danger.
Mm. Well, you know, and that's what I found, you know, after I got over my own resistances to this factor, and I actually looked at the science behind it, there are some fascinating studies that show that this back part of our brain, right, this reptilian brain, which is you know, where intuition lives, as well as in our gut, those two parts are in direct communication. But there's fascinating studies that show that the reptilian brain is incredibly accurate at leading us away from danger. Incredibly. And it doesn't go through a thought process, right? It doesn't say, oh, let me explain to you why you should move. It just says, move.
No, it just gives you an order.
it just gives you a direct order. And so it's confusing for, you know, the people in our culture who are so used to thinking things through logically and using your frontal cortex.
Mm-hmm.
When this back part of your brain kicks in, it doesn't think logically or rationally. It just gives orders. But the studies that have been done on it show that it's so incredibly accurate at steering you away from danger. And just, you know, a quick study on that was this, it's this curtain study. Everybody knows about the Iowa card study, and I mentioned that in my book as well. But a lesser known, but I think more fascinating study was done at Cornell, having people sit in front of a computer where there were two curtains, left and right, and you had to guess which curtain the object was behind. And they did this about, you know, 20 times, and it was randomly generated which curtain it would go behind. So it was just, you know, a computer test. You clicked your mouse and stuff, and you guessed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these people were hooked up to sensors on their bodies, you know, on their sweat glands and their heart and everything. The body always knew the right answer every single time.
Mm-hmm.
Their minds, their thinking minds, often overrode that and said, well, you know, it can't be that one again. It was that one last time. So they didn't always click on the right answer, but their sweat glands would always open up over the dangerous or incorrect answer. And their heart rate would always become calmer and less variable when they moved the mouse over the correct answer. So at a very, and this wasn't a life-threatening situation, right? So your intuitive voice is not screaming at you, you know, it's curtain one. But even in that simple exercise, your intuition is talking to you through your body, which I find so fascinating.
Yeah, the animals have that. You know, the animals know what, the GMO studies where the cows won't eat the GMO corn, and the radioactive stone study where the dog with a tumor always goes to the bowl with the radioactive stone because the small dose of radiation kills cancer. So, and of course, the dog doesn't know. I mean, the dog just knows which of five bowls only goes to one bowl out of five different bowls every time. Well, that's because that's the water that's going to cure the cancer. So it's really interesting. Yeah.
I do want to mention, too, that
if you're in a family and somebody gets cancer, there's a large battles that go on within families about kind of power struggles about trying to get the person to do what they think is right. And I want to just mention that maybe it would be better to step back and encourage the patient's intuition rather than to force your opinion on them, because their survival really depends on their intuition, not your opinion. And you've probably seen this too with, you know, the family just really wanting to go one way when the patient wants to go another way.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you brought that up, because it's a real challenge for radical remission survivors, because often their intuition is telling them to stop the chemo or to, you know, move to a different state, and their family is like, what? What are you talking about? And they're so afraid. The family is so afraid for them. that they just they put all this fear on it, whereas the person's intuition is actually quite clear. And that actually ties into another one of my nine factors that I found, which was increasing social support. And so radical remission survivors, whether they actively tried to get more social support or whether it just sort of came out of the woodwork when they told people they had cancer, a big part of their healing was feeling loved and supported by their friends and family. And a little caveat in that chapter of my book is not all friends and family are supportive. And so,
a lot are opinionated, though.
But it's so important for your healing to receive and perceive that you are being loved. And so, for some people, what that meant was actually distancing themselves from certain family members or certain friends, and actually removing that relationship because it wasn't supportive, and they had to go out and find a new community of people who would support their choices. So it's a wonderful insight for you to bring up, and I certainly found it in my research as well.
And with breast cancer, there's a whole section of women who get breast cancer who have never really even paid attention to their own spiritual needs because they're so busy nurturing everybody around them. And they appropriately get very selfish and just tell the people around to fend for themselves because they're going to go take care of their needs now that they have cancer. And so that's appropriate. That's what needs to happen. It's called balance, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I certainly interviewed some alternative healers who, they believed that the site of a cancer was, if it was emotionally caused, was related to sort of the emotions around that organ. And, you know, we're getting into the details of traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurveda and things like that. But, you know, the breast is a very nurturing organ, right? That's where we literally feed other humans and help them survive. And so if a breast cancer is emotionally caused, according to some of the healers that I interviewed, and of course, I'm not saying that, that's what they said, but their treatment then, if they believed that the cause was emotional related to the breast, was to say, you know, there's an imbalance here. You're caregiving too much for others and you're not caring for yourself. So your chi is depleted in that organ. So it's sometimes worth looking at, you know, and in Chinese medicine, for example, grief is processed in the lungs. So, and anger is processed in the liver, right? So sometimes if there's an emotional basis to the cancer or the imbalance in your body, looking at which organ system it's in can give you a map of what to work on.
Right. Yeah, anything that lowers the energy. So it's... There are certain energetic patterns, you know, the grief for the lungs, and if you damage your throat chakra by lying all the time, you also increase your risk of lung cancer. I read the other day that sudden severe fear of death can cause lung cancer, which is interesting. It might trigger grief.
Maybe it triggers
you know,
grief.
Perhaps. Yeah. Right, right.
I interviewed one alternative healer. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, it's just that it's there. I don't think it's just one thing, but I think that there are certain patterns that the Chinese and the Indians that developed Ayurvedic medicine observed over thousands and thousands of years, and they're probably right on. Yeah, they're probably very accurate. So we need to pay more attention to the patient that has the disease rather than the disease that has the patient.
Exactly, exactly. And many of the healers and radical remission survivors that I've studied would say, you know, breast cancer can be caused by a variety of things. You know, for some people it might be, you know, electromagnetic exposure, and for other people it might be...
Like the cell phone. Wearing your cell phone on your breast can cause breast cancer. I can tell you that right now.
Well, yeah, and I guess men would do that.
Tucking it in your bra. Don't do that.
Oh, tucking your bra.
Not a good idea.
Not a good idea. In a breast pocket.
Yeah. Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information?
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, people can read more about me at my website, kelly-turner.com. And that's sort of details all the things I'm working on these days, from a feature film about radical remission to a docuseries. Lots of fun things going on. I have an online course coming up. In addition to the book, which actually just got its 20th language, which was exciting. So it's now in 20 languages.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But another thing that you'll find on that site, another one of my projects that's near and dear to my heart, is continuing this research and making it easily accessible to patients and survivors. So the research continues mm-hmm. at radicalremission.com. And as you know, Dr. Kolb, a big problem with these kind of radical remission cases is that they're not tracked or studied or reported anywhere. They're not part of the
right.
National Cancer Registry, which is how we get all our statistics. Mm-hmm. So we actually don't know how often these things, these cases are happening. They're happening a lot more often than what we see reported in the medical journals. And a good example of that is just since my book came out in the last year and a half, we've collected 6 times the amount of radical remission cases that are typically published during that time frame in the medical journals. And
mm-hmm.
so I just encourage people, if you've had a radical remission or you know someone who's had one, tell them to go to radicalremission.com so that I can track them and study them, and
mm-hmm.
they can tell me their story in 10 minutes or less. It's really vital that that these cases be tracked and studied so that we can learn from them, right? Because if someone's healing from stage 4 cancer, I don't care how they're doing it. I don't care if they're standing on their head for 10 hours a day. If someone's healing from stage 4 cancer, they deserve to be studied.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. One thing I want you to pay attention to is if they are put on an antipsychotic, Abilify or Risperidol. Not because they're psychotic, but because these are being used all the time for anxiety and depression. And, you know, if you have cancer, anxiety and depression can be hand-in-hand with cancer,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
Because I suspect that putting people on Abilify and Risperidol is able to block the entrance of cancer into the third dimension and may very well lead to remission.
You think that
so just ask them what meds they're on. Yeah.
Okay.
It's important.
You think that those two drugs can cure cancer?
I've seen a lot of indication to that effect.
Wow.
And there's studies out, a number of studies. There's one psychiatrist who had 5,000 schizophrenic patients, and he noted that none of the patients with cancer, after he started treating them with the antipsychotics, had cancer that got worse, and in fact many went into remission with no treatment. And then there's a study showing that schizophrenics, and they were being treated, have much less prostate cancer than the average male population. And there was a cancer researcher in Canada that was dripping Thorazine on cancer stem cells, and they reverted to normal.
Interesting. Well, the idea of cancer cells going back to normal healthy cells is something that's come up a lot in my radical remission research. There are plenty mm-hmm. of healers and radical remission subjects themselves who believe that it's very possible not to kill your cancer, but to actually rehabilitate those cells into healthy cells.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, cancer cells are nothing more than healthy cells gone amok, right? Something's
exactly.
damaged.
So if you turn them around, they'll go back to normal.
Right.
And quit reproducing and trying to take over the body. Exactly. Well,
exactly.
What I see it as an energetic invasion, fourth dimensional intrusion into the third, similar to schizophrenia and Morgellons, that can be blocked with antipsychotics. And, I mean, almost every single patient I've seen with Morgellons that I put on Abilify has been cured completely, given that their vitamin D levels are high, you know, normal, and then given that we do detox and get them out of a moldy environment. But the minute they stop that Abilify, within a week, the disease is back.
Wow. And
yeah, that's why they thought Morgellons was a form of schizophrenia, which it is not. I mean, it's very, very different. It's a very physical disease with a very severe immune deficit, whereas schizophrenia, there's no immune deficit at all. So it's a totally different disease. But I had spiritual guidance on how to treat Morgellons, and that same spiritual guidance says, oh, by the way, you can treat cancer like this. So we started doing it.
And do you see any side effects with the Abilify or the other
one? Know, oddly enough, no. Now, not everybody muscle tests for Abilify. If you're older, you probably will not. Like in 70s and 80s, they don't tolerate it well. The side effects so far, weight gain, there's been a couple of patients that developed some dyskinesias on it at high doses. That was more in the Morgellons patient. But most of my patients who are on it tolerate it very well. And you can do risperidol. I mean, there are some other drugs that you can do if you can't get Abilify.
Wow.
It's just that Abilify is being marketed as pretty much of a, you know, treatment for all sorts of things. So insomnia, anxiety, depression. And it just works really well for these other things. So,
wow.
I mean, yeah, that could be a cause of spontaneous remission if you think about it. If they started taking one of these antipsychotics, just
absolutely
unbeknownst to anybody, you know. But that
right,
can do
right.
It.
Well, I'm gonna add that to my research questionnaire. Thank
List
you.
Of, yeah.
First, yeah. I've heard of that. So thanks for that.
Yeah, I don't think anybody else has really figured that one out. I didn't figure it out. I was actually guided to it with the spiritual doctors I work with. But anyway, we're at the end of our hour. Thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Pleasure as usual. We've been interviewing Dr. Kelly Turner, her book Radical Remission, Surviving Cancer Against All Odds. And this is the way we're going to learn about cancer remissions, is we're going to study them. So I'm glad you're doing that, Kelly.
Absolutely. Studying is always a good way to move through a problem. Ignoring remissions never gets us anywhere.
That's right. The ostrich technique. Bury your head in the sand. Hope it goes away.
It has right. not been working well. Has not been working well. Well, thanks for having me on the show again, and I learned a lot. Thanks so much.
Well, great. Well, this is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Please join us next week.